Tyrion noted Sir Lynn Corbray, slender as a sword, Lord Hunter, with his gouty legs, the widowed Lady Waynewood, surrounded by her sons. Others sported sigils he did not know, broken lance, green viper, burning tower, wing chalice. Among the Lords of the Vale were several of his companions from the high road. Sir Roderick Cassel, pale from half-heel wounds, stood with Sir Willis Wode beside him. Merillion the singer had found a new wood harp. Tyrion smiled. Whatever happened here tonight, he did not wish it to happen in secret, and there was no one like a singer for spreading a story near and far. In the rear of the hall, Bronn lounged beneath a pillar. The free rider's black eyes were fixed on Tyrion, and his hand lay lightly on the pommel of his sword. Tyrion gave him a long look, wondering. Catelyn Stark spoke first. "You wish to confess your crimes, we're told?" "I do, my lady," Tyrion answered. Lysa Arryn smiled at her sister. "The sky cells always break them. The guards can see them there, and there's no darkness to hide in." "He does not look broken to me," Lady Catelyn said. Lady Lysa paid her no mind. "Say what you will," she commanded Tyrion. "And now to roll the dice," he thought, with another quick glance back at Bronn. "Where to begin, eh? I'm a vile little man, I confess it. My crimes and sins are beyond counting, my lords and ladies. I have lain with whores, not once, but hundreds of times. I have wished my own lord father dead, and my sister, our gracious queen as well." Behind him someone chuckled. "I have not always treated my servants with kindness. I have gambled. I have even cheated, I blush to admit. I have said many cruel and malicious things about the noble lords and ladies of the court." That drew outright laughter. Silence! Lysa Arryn's pale round face had turned a burning pink. "What do you imagine you're doing, dwarf?" Tyrion cocked his head to one side. "Why, confessing my crimes, my lady." Catelyn Stark took a step forward. "You are accused of sending a hard knife to slay my son Bran in his bed, and of conspiring to murder Lord John Arryn, the Hand of the King." Tyrion gave a helpless shrug. "Those crimes I cannot confess, I fear. I know nothing of any murders." Lady Lysa rose from her weirwood throne. "I will not be made mock of. You have had your little jape, imp. I trust you enjoyed it. Sir Vardis, take him back to the dungeons, but this time find him a smaller cell, with a floor more sharply sloped." "Is this how justice is done in the Vale?" Tyrion roared so loudly that Sir Vardis froze for a moment. "Does honour stop at the bloody gate? You accuse me of crimes. I deny them. So you throw me into an open cell to freeze and starve?" He lifted his head to give them all a good look at the bruises Mort had left on his face. "Where is the king's justice? Is this Eri not part of the Seven Kingdoms? I stand accused, you say, very well. I demand a trial. Let me speak, and let my truth or falsehood be judged openly in the sight of gods and men." A low murmuring filled the high hall. He had her, Tyrion knew. He was high-born, the son of the most powerful lord in the realm, the brother of the queen. He could not be denied a trial. Guardsmen in sky-blue cloaks had started towards Tyrion, but Sir Vardis bid them halt and looked to Lady Lysa. Her small mouth twitched in a petulant smile. "If you are tried and found to be guilty of the crimes for which you stand accused, then by the king's own laws you must pay with your own life's blood. We keep no headsmen in the Eyrie, my lord of Lannister. Open the moon door." The press of spectators parted. A narrow, weirwood door stood between two slender marble pillars, a crescent moon carved in the white wood. Those standing closest edged backward as a pair of guardsmen marched through. One man removed the heavy bronze bars, the second pulled the door inward. Their blue cloaks rose snapping from their shoulders, caught in the sudden gust of wind that came howling through the open door. Beyond was the emptiness of the night sky, speckled with cold, uncaring stars. "Behold the king's justice," Lysa Aaron said. Torch flames fluttered like pennons along the wall, and here and there the odd torch guttered out. "Lysa, I think this unwise," Catelyn Stark said as the black wind swirled around the hall. Her sister ignored her. "You want a trial, my lord of Lannister?" "Very well, a trial you shall have. My son will listen to whatever you care to say, and you shall hear his judgment. Then you may leave, by one door or the other." She looked so pleased with herself, Tyrion thought, and small wonder. How could a trial threaten her when her weakling son was the lord judge? Tyrion glanced at her moon door.
"Mother, I want to see him fly," the boy had said.
How many men had the snuck-nosed little wretch sent through that door already? "I thank you, my good lady, but I see no need to trouble Lord Robert," Tyrion said politely. "The guards know the truth of my innocence. I will have their verdict, not the judgment of men. I demand trial by combat." A storm of sudden laughter filled the high hall of the Aerons. Lord Nestor Royce snorted. Sir Willis chuckled. Sir Lynn Corbray guffawed, and others threw back their heads and howled until tears ran down their faces. Marillion clumsily plucked a gay note on his new wood harp with the fingers of his broken hand. Even the wind seemed to whistle with derision as it came skirling through the moon door. Lysa Aaron's watery blue eyes looked uncertain. He had caught her off balance. "You have that right, to be sure." The young knight, with a green viper emblazoned on his surcoat, stepped forward and went to one knee. "My lady, I beg the boon of championing your cause." "The honor should be mine," old Lord Hunter said. "For the love I bore your lord husband, let me avenge his debt." "My father served Lord John faithfully as High Steward of the Vale," Sir Albar Royce boomed. "Let me serve his son in this." "The guards favour the man with a just cause," said Sir Lynn Corbray. "Yet often that turns out to be the man with the surer sword. We all know who that is," he smiled modestly. A dozen other men all spoke at once, clamouring to be heard. Tyrion found it disheartening to realize so many strangers were eager to kill him. Perhaps this had not been such a clever plan after all. Lady Lysa raised a hand for silence. "I thank you, my lords, as I know my son would thank you if he were among us. No men in the Seven Kingdoms are so bold and true as the Knights of the Vale. Would that I could grant you all this honor. Yet I can choose only one," she gestured. "Sir Vardis Egan, you were ever my lord husband's good right hand. You shall be our champion." Sir Vardis had been singularly silent. "My lady," he said gravely, sinking to one knee, "pray give this burden to another. I have no taste for it. The man is no warrior. Look at him. A dwarf, half my size, and lame in the legs. It would be shameful to slaughter such a man and call it justice." "Oh, excellent," Tyrion thought. "I agree." Lysa glared at him. "You demanded a trial by combat. And now I demand a champion, such as you have chosen for yourself. My brother Jaime will gladly take my part, I know. Your precious Kingslayer is hundreds of leagues from here," snapped Lysa Aaron. "Send a bird for him. I will gladly await his arrival." You will face Sir Varys on the morrow. Singer, Tyrion said, turning to Marillion, when you make a ballad of this, be certain you tell them how Lady Arryn denied the dwarf the right to a champion, and sent him forth lame and bruised and hobbling to face her finest knight. I deny you nothing, Lysa Arryn said, her voice peeved and shrill with irritation. Name your champion, imp, if you think you can find a man to die for you. If it's all the same to you, I'd sooner find one to kill for me. Tyrion looked over the long hall. No one moved. For a long moment he wondered if it had all been a colossal blunder. Then there was a stirring in the rear of the chamber. I'll stand for the dwarf, Bronn called out. Eddard. He dreamt an old dream of three knights in white cloaks and a tower long fallen, and Lyanna in a bed of blood. In the dream his friends rode with him, as they had in life. Proud Martin Cassel, Jory's father, faithful Theowell, Ethan Glover, who had been Brandon's squire, Sir Mark Riswell, soft of speech and gentle of heart, the Crannog man, Howlan Reed, Lord Dustin, on his great red stallion. Ned had known their faces as well as he knew his own once, but the years leech at a man's memories, even those he has vowed never to forget. In the dream they were only shadows, grey wraiths on horses made of mist. They were seven facing three, in the dream as it had been in life. Yet these were no ordinary three. They waited before the Round Tower, the red mountains of dawn at their backs, their white cloaks billowing in the wind. And these were no shadows. Their faces burn clear even now. Sir Arthur Dane, the Sword of the Morning, had a sad smile on his lips. The hilt of the great sword Dawn poked up over his right shoulder. Sir Oswald Went was on one knee, sharpening his blade with a whetstone. Across his white enameled helm, the black bat of his house spread its wings. Between them stood fierce old Sir Gerald Hightower, the White Bull, Lord Commander of the King's Guard. "I looked for you on the Trident," Ned said to them. "We were not there," Sir Gerald answered. "Woe to the usurper if we had been," said Sir Oswald. "When King's Landing fell, Sir Jaime slew your king with a golden sword, and I wondered where you were." "Far away," Sir Gerald said. "Or Ares would yet sit on the Iron Throne, and our false brother would burn in seven hells. I came down on Storm's End to lift the siege," Ned told them, "and the Lords Tyrell and Redwine dipped their banners and all their knights bent their knee to pledge us fealty. I was certain you would be among them." "Our knees do not bend easily," said Sir Arthur Dane. "Sir Willem Darry is fled to Dragonstone with your queen and Prince Viserys. I thought you might have sailed with him." "Sir Willem is a good man and true," said Sir Oswald. "But not of the King's Guard," Sir Gerard pointed out. "The King's Guard does not flee." "Then or now," said Sir Arthur. He donned his helm. "We swore a vow," explained old Sir Gerald. Ned's wraiths moved up beside him with shadow swords in hand. They were seven against three. "And now it begins," said Sir Arthur Dane, the Sword of the Morning. He unsheathed Dawn and held it with both hands. The blade was pale as milk glass, alive with light. "No," Ned said with sadness in his voice, "now it ends." As they came together in a rush of steel and shadow, he could hear Lyanna screaming, "Eddard!" she called. A storm of rose petals blew across a blood-streaked sky, as blue as the eyes of death. "Lord Eddard!" Lyanna called out again. "I promise," he whispered. "Leah, I promise." "Lord Eddard!" a man echoed from the dark. Groaning, Eddard Stark opened his eyes. Moonlight streamed through the tall windows of the Tower of the Hand.
Lord Eddard.
A shadow stood over his bed.
How long?
The sheets were tangled, his legs splinted and plastered. A dull throb of pain shot up his side. 6 days and 7 nights, the voice was Van Poole's. The steward held a cup to Ned's lips. Drink, my lord.
What? Only water?
Maester Purcell said you would be thirsty. Ned drank. His lips were parched and cracked. The water tasted sweet as honey.
The king left orders, Van Poole told him. When the cup was empty, he would speak with you, my lord.
On the morrow, Ned said, when I am stronger. He could not face Robert now. The dream had left him weak as a kitten.
My lord, Poole said, he commanded us to send you to him the moment you opened your eyes.
The steward busied himself lighting a bedside candle. Ned cursed softly. Robert was never known for his patience.
Tell him I'm too weak to come to him. If he wishes to speak to me, I should be pleased to receive him here. I hope you'll wake him from a sound sleep and summon...
He was about to say Jory, when he remembered.
Summon the captain of my guard.
Alan stepped into the bedchamber a few moments after the steward had taken his leave.
My lord?
Poole tells me it has been 6 days, Ned said. I must know how things stand.
The Kingslayer has fled the city, Alan told him. The talk is he's ridden back to a Castle Rock to join his father. The story of how Lady Catelyn took the imp is on every lip. I have put on extra guards, if it please you.
It does, Ned assured him.
My daughters? They have been with you every day, my lord. Sansa prays quietly, but Arya...
He hesitated.
She has not said a word since they brought you back.
She's a fierce little thing, my lord. I've never seen such anger in a girl. Whatever happens, Ned said, I want my daughters kept safe. I fear this is only the beginning.
No harm will come to them, Lord Eddard, Alan said. I stake my life on that.
Jory and the others?
I gave them over to the Silent Sisters to be sent north to Winterfell. Jory would want to lie beside his grandfather.
It would have to be his grandfather, for Jory's father was buried far to the south. Martin Castell had perished with the rest. Ned had pulled the tower down afterward and used its bloody stones to build 8 cairns upon the ridge. It was said that Rhaegar had named the place the Tower of Joy. But for Ned, it was a bitter memory. They had been 7 against 3, yet only 2 had lived to ride away. Eddard Stark himself, and the little Crannog man, Howland Reed. He did not think it omened well that he should dream that dream again, after so many years.
You've done well, Alan, Ned was saying when Van Poole returned. The steward bowed low. His grace is without my lord, and the queen with him.
Ned pushed himself up higher, wincing as his leg trembled with pain. He had not expected Cersei to come. It did not bode well that she had.
Send them in and leave us. What we have to say should not go beyond these walls.
Poole withdrew quietly.
Robert had taken time to dress. He wore a black velvet doublet with a crown stag of Baratheon worked upon the breast in golden thread, and a golden mantle with a cloak of black and gold squares. A flagon of wine in his hand, his face already flushed from drink.
Cersei Lannister entered behind him, a jewel tiara in her hair.
Your grace, Ned said, your pardons, I cannot rise.
No matter, the king said gruffly. Some wine, eh, from the arbor, a good vintage.
A small cup, Ned said. My head is still heavy from the milk of the puppy.
A man in your place should count himself fortunate that his head is still on his shoulders, the queen declared.
Quiet, woman, Robert snapped.
He brought Ned a cup of wine.
Does the leg still pain you?
Some, Ned said. His head was swimming, but it would not do to admit to weakness in front of the queen.
Pycelle swears it will heal clean,
Robert frowned.
I take it you know what Catelyn has done.
I do. Ned took a small swallow of wine. "My lady wife is blameless, Your Grace. All she did at my command."
"I'm not pleased, Ned," Robert grumbled.
"By what right do you dare lay hands on my blood?" Cersei demanded. "Who do you think you are?"
"The hand of the king," Ned told her with icy courtesy. "Charged by your own lord husband to keep the king's peace and enforce the king's justice."
"You were the hand of the king," Cersei began, "but now—"
"Silence!" the king roared. "You asked him a question, and he answered it."
Cersei subsided, cold with anger, and Robert turned back to Ned.
"Keep the king's peace, you say. Is that how you keep the king's peace, Ned?"
"Seven men are dead."
"Eight," the queen corrected.
"Trigar died this morning of the blow Lord Stark gave him."
"Abductions on the king's road and drunken slaughter in the streets," the king said. "I will not have it, Ned."
"Catelyn had good reason for taking the imp."
"I said I will not have it." "To hell with her reasons. You will command her to release the dwarf at once, and you will make your peace with Jaime."
"Three of my men were butchered before my eyes because Jaime Lannister wished to chase me.
Am I to forget that?"
"My brother was not the cause of the quarrel," Cersei told the king. "Lord Stark was returning drunk from a brothel. His men attacked Jaime and his guards, even as his wife attacked Tyrion on the king's road."
"You know me better than that, Robert," Ned said. "Ask Lord Baelish if you doubt me. He was there."
"I've talked to Littlefinger," Robert said. "He claims he rode off to bring the gold cloaks before the fighting began, but he admits you were returning from some whorehouse."
"Some whorehouse? Damn your eyes, Robert. I went there to have a look at your daughter."
"Her mother has named her Bara. She looks like that first girl you fathered, when we were boys together in the Vale." He watched the queen as he spoke. Her face was a mask, still and pale, betraying nothing. Robert flushed.
"Bara," he grumbled. "Is that supposed to please me? Damn the girl. I thought she had more sense."
"She cannot be more than 15, and a whore. And you thought she had sense?" Ned said, incredulous. His leg was beginning to pain him sorely. It was hard to keep his temper.
"The fool child is in love with you, Robert."
The king glanced at Cersei.
"This is no fit subject for the queen's ears."
"Her Grace will have no liking for anything I have to say," Ned replied. "I am told the Kingslayer has fled the city. Give me leave to bring him back to justice." The king swirled the wine in his cup, brooding. He took a swallow.
"No," he said. "I want no more of this. Jaime slew three of your men, and you five of his. Now it ends."
"Is that your notion of justice?" Ned flared.
"If so, I am pleased that I am no longer your hand."
The queen looked to her husband. "If any man had dared to speak to a Targaryen as he has spoken to you—"
"You take me for Aerys?"
Robert interrupted. "I took you for a king. Jaime and Tyrion are your own brothers by all the laws of marriage and the bonds we share. The Starks have driven off the one and seized the other. This man dishonors you with every breath he takes, and yet you stand there meekly, asking if his leg pains him, and would he like some wine?"
Robert's face was dark with anger. "How many times must I tell you, told your tongue, woman?"
Cersei's face was a study in contempt. "What a jape the gods have made of us two," she said.
"By all rights, you ought to be in skirts, and me in mail."
Purple with rage, the king lashed out, a vicious backhand blow to the side of the head. She stumbled against the table and fell hard. Yet Cersei Lannister did not cry out. Her slender fingers brushed her cheek, where the pale smooth skin was already reddening. On the morrow, the bruise would cover half her face.
"I shall wear this as a badge of honor," she announced. "Wear it in silence, or I'll honor you again,"
Robert vowed. He shouted for a guard. Sir Meryn Trant stepped into the room, tall and somber in his white armor.
"The queen is tired. See her to her bedchamber."
The knight helped Cersei to her feet and led her out without a word. Robert reached for the flagon and refilled his cup.
You see what she does to me, Ned?
The king seated himself, cradling his wine cup.
My loving wife, the mother of my children.